Notes from America is supported by Future Hindsight, an award-winning podcast that shares big ideas about participating in American democracy, beyond voting, but short of running for office. Join host Mila Atmos for stimulating and incisive conversations with citizen changemakers on topics ranging from gerrymandering, policing equity, and voting rights. In this election year, Future Hindsight offers an unaffiliated perspective into what's at stake and how citizens can make an impact at the local, state, and national level. You'll always come away with something hopeful. Tune in every Thursday to get engaged and stay engaged.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
This is the United States of Anxiety, a show about the unfinished business of our history and its grip on our future.
As of now, indoor dining has been shut again.
Officials took what seemed like another step backwards in the war against COVID-19, another sign that the second wave is upon us.
My advice is be careful. You are not imprisoned in your home.
We're humans. We're social creatures. We need each other to survive and to thrive.
We had a big loneliness problem in this country before COVID-19. Social distancing has put it on steroids.
As somebody with a mental illness, sometimes my house isn't the safest place for me. Sometimes I really do need to get out.
When you live alone, when you say a household and you're the household, the thought of not being with other people for an indefinite amount of time is overwhelming.
Welcome to the show and happy holidays, everybody. I'm Kai Wright. And this week, I want to start by just introducing you to somebody I met who turned out to be kind of a kindred spirit.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
There we go.
Can you hear me?
Hi, my name is Adiva.
This is Adiva Kayseri, who is a 13-year-old eighth grader who lives in Queens. And she's the first of a few people you're going to meet during this show, which is going to be kind of a reflection on the year we've all been through. A reflection about our efforts to connect with one another in trying times. And a reflection with history in mind, too, but I'll get to that in a bit. For now, the point is, we're not live, we're not taking calls this week. We just want to introduce you to some people in our community, starting with Adiva. Adiva, what's the thing you're most looking forward to in the new year, in 2021?
First off, I want this to end. I want everything to go back to normal. I want to go to school like a normal person, hang out with my friends again, and I just don't want to stay home. I'm so sick of staying home all day.
And so, Adiva, for you, this year, it has been especially hard, I imagine, because you just moved to New York and Queens from Bangladesh, right?
It hasn't even been 2 years yet.
So when this pandemic hit, you were really just getting settled in. What was that like?
When I first came, I didn't have a lot of friends. And when I did make some, The people that I had, I used to try to, like, cherish those people. And back in Bangladesh, you don't get to go a lot of places by yourself, right? So we would go to, like, McDonald's, get food. And we would just, like, go to the park before school. And even after school, we would, like, go over each other's, like, houses and stuff like that. Goof around and just have fun.
What was it like having to be stuck at home all of a sudden?
There was a friend I had, a specific friend that I had since like sixth grade, and they were one of my first ever friends to actually stick with me. And me and her were really close. And after the lockdown, I was just very down and I didn't even feel like talking to anybody else. Like, and every time she would call, most of the times I wouldn't answer because either I was tired or just wasn't really in the mood to talk to anybody.
Because you just wanted to shut down.
Exactly.
I kind of know what that feels like, to be honest. Like, I've had a few experiences where it's like, I love my friends and I miss my friends, but at the same time, I don't know, there's something about like all the technology of it that also feels like I don't want to be bothered.
Exactly. Every time someone texts me now, it's like, I don't feel the excitement like I used to. Like, whenever I would see a text, it's like, oh, they texted me. Okay. Like, cool. I don't really feel like talking to anybody. And so I wasn't talking to her at all, like, for months. And just one day she texted me. She was like, hey, you haven't been talking to me. I don't know what happened to you, but if you're going to act this way, then I'm not going to be friends with you for very long. I was like, there's a lot of things going on, you know, it's just stressful. Like, I can't always talk to everyone. She's like, I get that, but you should show some kind of effort. I was like, I'm trying to. And she was like, nah, you know, I can't, you know, be friends with you like that. It's kind of hard. I was like, all right. And so I basically lost her.
Oh, wow. In the course of this pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry. That sucks.
I usually don't talk about how I feel and stuff like that. I like to keep it bottled up inside. I feel like not everyone understands. So it's like, I understand the best. I'm just keep it to myself.
Did you have anything that you experienced in those months that you kind of look back and wish you had talked to somebody about, that you'd wish you'd been able to share with one of your friends?
To be honest, yeah. You know, I'm just stressed. Like, I want to take everything out and just, like, tell somebody and, you know, maybe they'll relate to me because they're in the same position I am.
Mm-hmm. Because maybe they were having the same process.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
When you imagined 2021 and you said, you know, getting back to normal, and if you, like, just sort of your wildest dreams of what it's going to be like.
Probably go somewhere, you know, just have fun. Or go somewhere far, I don't know. Just anywhere outside of my house.
Far could be down the block, right?
At least it's outside of my house.
I hear you.
Maybe like the beach or somewhere. I don't know.
This is a real grown folks thing, but I can't wait to be sitting at brunch on a Saturday afternoon, 5 or 6 of my friends there, and we're all wearing like short shorts and tank tops, and we're just laughing about stupid things. That's what I picture.
Yeah. I would say maybe like, you know, go over a friend's house, right? With like like 5 or 6 of my friends and just hang out, like watch movies or something, sing, maybe play volleyball or something.
I want to do that too. Before we let you go, is there anything you want to say to all those New Yorkers out there listening right now?
Go easy on the kids. It's really stressful. It's really stressful. And people think that we're having fun because we're home and stuff like that, but it's really not. So yeah, that's
cool. I hear that. Go easy on the adults too.
Well, yeah.
Go easy on all of us. We're all having a hard time.
True.
That was 13-year-old Adiva Kayseri. And as I said, she's one of a few people you're going to meet during this show who will just reflect on this really challenging year. This is our final show of 2020, and while we're always focused here on the collective choices we face as a society, we also try to keep in mind that we're all individual human beings, each trying our best, hopefully our best, to live together in love and in joy. That's been harder this year than most, but for some of us, the challenges of this year have also been transformative. So we're going to hear a couple of personal journeys, stories like Adiva's, that are about human connection. And we are still thinking about history as we do this. These stories will be our show's contribution to a 10-year time capsule that WNYC is making. The station's going to open that capsule in 2030, whoever is here then, and we'll see what our 2020 selves had to say about this remarkable year. So more about that time capsule later in the show. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, our next reflection on this crazy year. I'm Kai Wright, and this is the United States of Anxiety.
What if millions of Black Americans had been compensated for slavery? Join me, Trymaine Lee, as I explore the untold story of one of the only Black Americans who ever was. I talk to his descendants and discuss how reparations forever changed their family's trajectory and imagine a reality where reparations are paid to the rest of Black America. Into America presents Uncounted Millions, The Power of Reparations, a Black History Month series. New episodes drop Thursdays. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. This is United States of Anxiety. I'm Kai Wright, and this week we're helping to build a 10-year time capsule that WNYC is creating. You might recall that right before the election, we did our own little mini time capsule on this show, but now our whole station is participating as well as listeners. And for our own contribution, we're thinking about human connection, how hard it's been to maintain, where we found it, and what it's meant. And we're introducing you to a few people who are sharing their own stories of connection during the pandemic. So we're not live this week. We're not taking calls or anything. I just want to invite you to hear these personal stories. And at the end, I'll tell you how to add your own submission to the time capsule. All right? Our senior producer, Verilyn Williams, goes first.
Hey, Guy.
Hey, Verilyn.
So as you know, I moved back to the Bronx this year.
Yes.
Officially March 1st into an apartment that I love and, you know, thank God, because I've now spent months there working, thinking, laughing, exercising all alone.
All alone.
And, well, technically, I also fell in love, but that's a story for another day.
I was going to say, I don't think you're alone as far as I know, but anyway.
But I've also spent a lot of time checking in with family and friends, many of who are dealing with COVID and what it's doing to our city. And anytime I got a phone call that wasn't scheduled, my heart sank because I knew that anything could be waiting for me on the other side of picking up.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this one conversation with one of my friends at the station, Cindy Rodriguez.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
She's a reporter at WNYC.
Okay, that's going to work.
I've known her since I was a teenager. She's always been super supportive. And Cindy shared with me she was having a really hard time. And she uncharacteristically, because most reporters, they don't believe in being the story, she decided to share this time.
I got tested over the weekend because I thought that I would, you know, test negative. And I didn't. I tested positive.
So, Kai, what you need to know, when Cindy and I spoke, this was back in May, she had already been experiencing COVID symptoms for 2 months, and she was really sick. And like a lot of people, just had to assume she had it.
As I remember back then, it was still really hard to get a test.
Exactly. And Cindy had hoped the virus had already run its course.
So it was really hard for me to hear that. But then I spoke to my doctor, and she said that you need to trust me that you are not going to die from this, and you need to trust me that you're not going to get really sick.
Does Cindy have any idea how or where she got COVID-19?
Well, it's kind of impossible to really know. But when the virus started to spread in New York City back in March, Cindy was reporting in nursing homes, which were especially hit hard by COVID-19. A devastating amount of people died. And it wasn't long after that that Cindy woke up wheezing and feeling extremely sick.
I really did not think that I had the virus. I just thought I had like a regular run-of-the-mill cold.
But then she described her symptoms to her doctor.
I told her I had really bad headache and that I had like a little bit of feeling of asthma. And she said, you have the virus and you need to stay home and you can't leave until your symptoms go away. I also had a lot of chills. And then that was really, really hard for me to hear. And it was also hard for me to hear that I couldn't get tested and that there was nothing she could prescribe for me. I asked her if she could give me Plaquenil, which was this medication for autoimmune diseases that was supposed to be working. And she said, no, I can't. That's for people that are really sick and in the hospital. And then slowly I started to get sicker and my congestion got much worse and my head felt like it was going to explode. And I could not get warm and I'd lost my smell and my taste. And she said, all you can do is wait.
Cindy, like me, lives in an apartment all by herself. And actually, a lot of New Yorkers do. Something like 1 million people live alone in the city. And a vast majority of us are women.
It's really a hard moment for people that are living alone. I mean, it's a hard moment for everybody. But living alone, you have to really take care of yourself.
I don't know how this is hitting you, Kai, but for me, after a summer of, you know, a few socially distant picnics, and I had a small birthday celebration where I got to hug a friend I hadn't seen in months, it feels hard to emotionally connect with just how many unknowns there were in March, you know, like staying away from anyone you didn't already live with felt like the only way to stay safe and to keep the people you love safe.
Right. And we just had to like make our lives so small and stop seeing people. You know, I was here with my partner and I felt lucky as a consequence. At least I had somebody around.
And the truth is, Kai, so many of us were not well going into any of this, you know.
That's truth.
On top of dealing with COVID, Cindy has also been living with anxiety for almost a decade.
I knew that my anxiety was going to be through the roof. And my doctor, she offered me an inhaler. And I said, sure. And then I asked her for Xanax and she said, sure.
And her struggle with anxiety started with a really shocking experience.
So I guess a few years ago, probably like...
6 years ago, Cindy started to have a strange like tightness in her throat.
It almost felt like I was... You know, like the ball that you get in your throat before you're going to cry.
It really bothered her, and she assumed it was something physical.
And so I went to a bunch of different doctors. I went to an ENT doctor. I went to this specialist that deals with, like, voice issues. And then finally, I went to a neurologist, and the neurologist put me through all of these tests.
She told me the test involved sensors that were put all over her body.
They're really painful tests.
In order to measure whatever messages her muscles were sending to her brain.
He called me and said, come in for the results. But he was like, you need to bring somebody. And that felt very strange to me, but I was like, okay. And so my girlfriend at the time, my partner at the time, went with me. And he brought us into his office and he sat us down and we both were like, what's happening here? And he said, I'm sorry to tell you, but you have Lou Gehrig's disease. And my partner didn't quite know what Lou Gehrig's disease was, so he told her what it was.
Lou Gehrig's affects the nervous system. It's also known as ALS.
And he said that it's a disease that moves quickly and that it was probably going to kill me. And she broke down and was sobbing hysterically. And she really could not hold it together. And she was really distraught. And I looked at him and said, I don't believe that. And I was in disbelief.
She couldn't believe it, yet she was destroyed by it.
I remember I called my sister and from there, and I told her, and we both just started sobbing.
Cindy went on a search for other neurologists. She saw two other doctors that ran the same tests and got very different results.
And they both said to me that I do not have ALS, and one of them was very clear, like, you do not have to worry. It was a mistake. It was misdiagnosed. And you can live your life and know that you're fine. And the other one was like, it looks fine to me. It looks like you're fine, but you never know. And that you never know just stayed with me for so long.
For instance, one of the first signs of ALS is weakness in your muscles. So weakness in your legs, your hands, your tongue.
Everything became a test of those things. I was constantly looking at my tongue. I was walking on my toes to make sure that I could. I was, you know, when I'd go to the gym and lift weights, I was like, why can I only lift 15 pounds today? And yesterday it was 20.
This misdiagnosis, this death sentence essentially, took such a toll, and getting COVID just brought it all back.
And that was kind of the beginning of this, like, distrust in my body and my health. And it's kind of similar now. It's kind of that same, like, what I have this and what is it going to do to me? And can I trust that my body is really going to be okay? On April the 3rd, I see that I wrote to her.
When we were talking, Cindy pulled up all these messages between her and her doctor during this time. So I asked her to read through some of them.
I'm feeling so much better. Yesterday, things started to turn around. By the evening, I was feeling stronger. My appetite had come back, and it feels like I have the final bits of a normal cold. And then I said, thank you so much for your care and concern. You and your staff are so brave for exposing yourselves to people who caught this and who are really sick and suffering. Crossing my fingers, this doesn't get as bad as predicted, and we can hug each other again one day soon. And then she said, thank you. I'll take you up on that hug when we can. I'm normally not overly huggy, but this might have changed that. You don't realize how much you miss human contact until it's sharply curtailed. I'm thrilled you're improving. Brace for a possible backward step, but anticipate continued overall improvement. 3 days later, it was like the backslide came. I have chills again, and I've lost my smell and taste again, and I can't get rid of the head congestion. And then, you know, April 10th, I can't believe how many times I've bothered this poor woman. Then I wrote, congestion is worse on the 11th. Breathing is getting harder, feels more than anxiety, but anxiety is adding to it. Then I saw her, and she offered to give me an antibiotic called Zithromax, because she was like, it seems to be working on some people. Maybe you have like an underlying bacterial infection. And I remember that day because the second she told me she was going to prescribe me something, I felt so much better. And like the difficulty breathing suddenly went away. So it was just like, it's the idea that, oh, this, you can actually treat this. Like I could actually get better. But of course, the Zithromax did not do anything. It just, it was like a placebo effect that lasted for a couple of days.
So many of us were on edge at the beginning of this pandemic. You know, hospitals were turning sick patients away. We were seeing footage of refrigerated trucks for the people that we lost. We were all worrying about everything. But Cindy and her doctor already knew anxiety was a problem for her.
I asked her if maybe I should take Lexapro, which is like a mood stabilizer that my sister was taking, to see if that helped. And she gave it to me, and that really had a really bad effect on me, and it threw me into this panic. I couldn't lay down because I was dizzy and I was super nauseous. My vision went blurry, so I couldn't see my phone. It was pretty awful. And I called my sister like at, God, I don't even remember anymore, midnight or 2 a.m. And she stayed on the phone with me from 2 a.m. until like 3 o'clock the next day. And then I was able to get the doctor to call in. And she was saying to me, you have to get up off the floor and you have to get to the Xanax and you have to take a Xanax and you have to pass out and end this. And finally I did, and I passed out, and I woke up like I don't know how many hours later on my floor.
Man, that is so hard to hear. That is just such an intense experience, and so many people had these kinds of crazy experiences this year.
Yeah, and as I listened to Cindy, both of us sitting in our apartments alone, staring at each other through Zoom, I saw her, as expected, really struggling to remember. So we called the person she called at the time.
Verilyn, this is my sister, Lenny. Lenny, this is Verilyn. Sorry you guys have to meet in this distant way, but at least you can see each other.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm well. I love your sister very much.
We do too.
So, Lena, as you know, you ended up being on the phone with me a long time. Can you just describe what you remember from that night?
Yeah, I remember you preparing me. So we were talking on the phone earlier in that evening, and you had said that you were having a lot of anxiety, and you prepared me that you might need me in the middle of the night. And I said, okay, I'm going to sleep with my phone by the bed and I'll keep my ringer on and you just call me for whatever you need. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, you called and you were not yourself, is just clearly panicked that something terrible was going to happen to you. You know, when people say someone is out of their mind, it's really just sounds like such an exaggeration, but you really were out of your mind. It wasn't, and I don't mean that in, I mean that in the sense of that was not who you were. I could tell when I talked to you, I was just trying to keep you calm and focused on the fact that you could breathe and that you were okay and that, you know, let's just check things off the box. I remember trying to walk you through and checking boxes off so I could focus you on each of those things. You know, we talked about you were afraid that you couldn't breathe. And I said, okay, well, if something happens, I can call 911. And you were worried about me calling 911. And I said, I have your address. I repeated your address to you. I said, I know the police. I've looked up the police precinct. I have that phone number. Like, I felt like if I could get you through the night, the sunlight, the daylight was going to give you at least a little bit different perspective. Because I always think nighttime, when you're sick or you're troubled, or you just feel so much more alone at night. And I felt like if I could just get you to daylight, that you would be a little bit better. I could reason with you a little bit more. So we just kept checking off these boxes of the things that were safety nets for you so I could work through the night on making you feel better.
My God, that must have been so horrible and stressful for you. To hear me not being myself and being so far away, it must have put you in a position where you really didn't know whether I should call 911. But you said to me that that wasn't the case, that you didn't vacillate. You knew that I shouldn't call 911.
Well, I knew you shouldn't call 911 because we did walk through, can you take a deep breath? And you could take a deep breath. It was just in some instant before you couldn't take a deep breath. And so you had, that's all you focused on. So we walked through all of the things. Do you have a fever? Can you take a deep breath? Are you coughing? Are you shaky? Are you weak? Did you eat? Like, we checked off all the boxes. So I knew you were okay. I knew it was really just what was happening with you psychologically, that where the problem was. And fortunately, you were reasonable about 911 because I said, Cindy, what is it that you expect them to do for you when they come? Because we've already talked through that you don't have a fever and you're not coughing and you can breathe. What is it that you want them to do? And I think that what you wanted was to have someone there to tell you you were okay.
Yeah. It was messy. It was pretty messy. But I've learned a lot about myself, for sure. And I knew that, you know, you're dealing with your own family. But I guess I didn't get to be too much.
No, you are not too much. I am, you know, I'm happy to be there for you, and I'm glad that I was able to be there for you, and I'm glad that you felt comfortable enough to share just such deep and hard things with me. You know, it's so important to be able to communicate how you're feeling.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and I think you're right. And I think that this is an experience that taught me that that's important. It's really something that I want to, I do want to be more open, and I do want to be more connected, and I do want to be closer. And I look forward to that being like a way of making something good out of an experience that was pretty traumatic for me and for so, so many other people.
So, Virilyn, we are gathering Cindy's story because, as I said, it's going to be part of the time capsule that we're going to put away until 2030. So, What do you think Cindy would say about all of this to 2030? What is her concluding thought on this?
Mm-hmm. I would say Cindy really sees all of this as an opportunity to grow. And to finally deal with that intense anxiety she's felt for so long.
I need this to be a transformational moment for me. And I hope that it is. And, you know, I understand how deep this anxiety runs. And I understand that I need to fix it. I mean, fix it is the wrong word. I don't think it'll ever get fixed, but I need to understand where it comes from. And I need to understand how to deal with it when it surfaces. Because, you know, it can be pretty torturous.
Part of what Cindy is discovering is how to be alone. And I don't mean living alone or even being all alone, because in that incredibly difficult moment, she was able to depend on her sister, right? Mm-hmm. What I mean is being on your own, being able to sit with yourself and face yourself and know and hear your own thoughts. She's been in a couple of relationships that were full of love, but just not right for her. And for the first time, she's now asking herself what she truly wants.
I do want to build a life with someone, you know. I want to live together. I want to have some pretty traditional things. You know, I've been in serious relationships before, but I've never really been able to ask for what I needed. You know, partly because I didn't know myself well enough to know what I needed, but I also couldn't do it because it made me feel so vulnerable, but it doesn't anymore. So that's one part of it. But more than that, I think, is just being there for myself and knowing myself better and trusting my instincts and trusting what I'm feeling and really acting on those things. And not avoiding them. You know, the anxiety comes, and then at times I can get to this point where I am saying these things to myself, and not just saying them, because anybody can say those things, but really believe them, you know, and know that, like, that I'm okay, that it's fine.
It makes me so happy to hear you say that, especially thinking about, like, I was thinking when you were talking about a support system, in that moment of like a peak crisis, like you just, in so many ways, had exactly what you needed, even though you live by yourself and all the different reasons why, you know, you might feel like you were alone, and this, like, the story that we tell ourselves. So, like, now the story is, I am okay.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's so true. You know, I've built some strong friendships in the midst of this, including with you. And I also know that so many other people are going through something so similar. And really, I'm just trying to remember that I got through something that was really difficult, and that, you know, I can really ride these large waves that life throws you.
This is the United States of Anxiety. I'm Kai Wright. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Carolyn Adams, the associate producer on the United States of Anxiety. You may have noticed that we've started to include links for companion episodes in the show descriptions. Just a few things from our archives that we think make for good follow-ups to what you're listening to, including this episode. So tap the description in your podcast app or visit our show site at wnyc.org/anxiety to find links to more episodes that we think you might like. If you haven't yet checked out An Invitation to Dream, it's another time capsule project we did the week before the presidential election, a shorter one, that helped us all imagine about what might come after Election Day. And here we are. So take a listen. We hope you enjoy.
Our next reflection comes from reporter Ginny Casas, who was out walking in Chicago this fall when she came across a flyer, an advertisement, looking for friends. It was posted by Nikki Crawford, who suddenly had a lot of free time this year.
My day job was a standardized patient. Do you know what that is?
No.
That is basically a fake sick person for medical students.
Back in March, when the first COVID-19 cases came to Chicago, Nikki Crawford was working this acting job.
But that's a job that requires, like, you know, a lot of people to fly in daily to touch my bare face. And so when, you know, little old pandemic came, we were like, oop, better put a hold on that for a little bit.
March turned to April, to May, to June, and Nikki was furloughed twice. So with all that new spare time, Nikki picked up some freelancing gigs and got into some new creative projects.
And I started making rugs as a little hobby. I don't know. I'm trying to think of what I've been doing since July. A little bit of like job hunting, making money, a little bit of making rugs, and then, of course, having conversations with strangers.
The pandemic stripped something essential from Nikki's life. I think a lot of us can relate. And when I first saw the flyer, I thought it was a call for companionship.
Can you just describe the ad for me?
Sure. An audio tour of this visual flyer. So this
it's a standard piece of printer paper, black and white,
with a little doodle person on there, one circular body with stick limbs and a little crown.
There's a speech bubble that says, "Hello!" Exclamation point.
And a lot of other, like, old school emoticons, like fingers pointing at it and, like, flowers and stuff like that.
And below that, it says, "I'm the friend you would have made if not for COVID."
We met at that event that was supposed to happen but got canceled. Remind me what that was? Also, what was that album you wanted me to check out?
At the bottom, there's tabs cut into the page with a phone number, like any other flyer advertising a room for rent or a car for sale. And each one says, "How are you? ?" Text me back.
You know, I'm using this simulation because I'm better at simulations than I am at making friends.
Nikki hung dozens of these flyers across a few neighborhoods. The one that I saw was taped under the mouth of a blue USPS mailbox. And it just struck me as so earnest. At a time when things are feeling so bleak, here was someone finding a creative way to connect. So I texted. And I asked Nikki to let me follow along.
Hi, Jenny. These are little notes that I've recorded either while I was walking and hanging up flyers. One thing I have gotten pretty good at is taping flyers to telephone poles all by myself. It's really easy to look like an idiot out there. Just walked by a flyer that I already put up, and I saw an older gentleman carrying groceries on his way home, I guess, and put them down to stop and read the flyer. He didn't take a tab with the number on it, but, you know, in a perfect world, maybe he has a really good memory, and I will get the best message that I'll ever receive tonight.
Hi, we got your number from the park.
Yeah. I got a voicemail. And what a voicemail. I think it's just a bunch of teens who found it.
Yeah, we found it. We'd like to say hi.
One of them that's, like, trying to call and, like, maybe is a bit nervous to do it. And they have another who's just making jokes and yelling in the background.
I bet you're asked that.
Sorry about that.
We have big mommy milkers.
And the other teen was like,
"Sorry about that. But you're probably a really cool person. And we'd like to get to know you.
Yeah,
and
your post is very cute. Very adorable. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Love you.
Bye-bye."
That was the only voicemail that Nikki got. The rest are all text messages. The conversations usually fall into one of two camps. Most people respond really genuinely. They give their real names, they tell Nikki about real things going on, and they ask normal niceties. How's your week? How have you been?
And then, like, the other 30% are like, "We met under the ocean in Costa Rica." And I'm like, cool, yeah, loved the sharks, you know? And I'll meet them there, and that's fun.
And that meeting them there, that sort of theater of humanity, that, more than anything else, turns out to be the thing that Nikki was missing.
So the first message I got within an hour of hanging these flyers up. And it's definitely one of the most powerful I've gotten. This is it. This is it. Dear friend, thank you for texting me. I wasn't sure if we'd manage to get in contact again. It feels like forever since we met at that crawfish eating contest, even though it was this morning. Do you remember? You ate 130 crawfish, which experts said was medically impossible. I ate zero because I don't like shellfish. I knew we would be fast acquaintances. I apologize for not using your name. As you recall, we exchanged only code names. Me, Steve. You, Big Steve. Regardless, I hope this finds you well. Please listen to Paul Simon's Gracelands. Warm regards, quote, Steve, end quote. And I was like, oh my God, what a powerful message, like an hour into this thing.
What Nikki likes so much about Steve is that they're taking the call from the flyer and just running with it, improvising fantasy scenarios that match Nikki's energy. And they go back and forth as these characters for weeks.
Dearest, biggest Steve, they write to me.
Together, they build a fake history, teeing each other up for the next imaginary thing.
To answer your question, yes, I've made many friends from events that were canceled because of COVID. A little over 20 so far.
But braided in there are real questions you would ask your friends. How's your sleep been? How's that project you were telling me about?
I'm happy to hear that you've made the acquaintance of so many people in these difficult times. If you're referring to the work project I'm always complaining about, sorry. Progress is tentatively steady. Honestly, creative energies have been in flux this year. I feel pretty optimistic about the new idea for a manuscript. Are you still planning that trip when things calm down?
Steve!
So lovely. So lovely, Steve. Thank you.
I'm like, genuine interaction always wins out. Always.
Sure, if you want to call this genuine interaction.
Nikki and Steve's ability to blend the make-believe and the real, it just throws me off. Maybe because I myself am always a little too earnest. I'm a bad liar, and that makes me a bad actor. And keeping up this fake reality with Steve or anyone else, it just seems taxing.
Like if I was doing this, like I would be like, serious inquiries only, you know, like.
You would send your friendship contract to them after a couple weeks, ask for a couple references for past friendships.
Yeah. It's almost as if you are like telling someone you have a crush on them, but always reserving the ability to be like, just kidding. Like that's hearing you
that's
describe
interesting.
It, I'm like, you're always ready to be like, oh,
wow.
We're just playing, or like, oh, you're really here for this. Like, I will show up with you.
God, and what's funny is if I ever was confessing a crush on someone, I would definitely like always have it in my back pocket, be like, eh, I got you. You know, like, ah, bro, haha, what if, right? You know? I do kind of hope, though, if I ever meet Steve and they see that I'm actually just some freaking bouncy kid loves to just send smiley faces and goof with people. What if they're like 50 and they're like, who the f*** is this? Like, I don't know. And that's to say, Jenny, 50-year-olds hate me historically. Hello, test.
I don't know if you're doing testing. Okay.
Hello, test.
Hi.
Test. Yeah? Okay. You got me?
Yeah. Yep, that worked.
Okay, great.
3 weeks after that first message from Steve, Nikki's inbox was swamped with messages from new people.
60, 61, 62, 63, 64. 64. Oh, my God.
Nikki sets aside an hour-ish every day to respond to this growing cast of characters. One person imagines that the two of them met at a strip club. Another person only texts in cat photos. And another person...
Their first messages were like, how have you been? I miss your hair. Touching it. You can't touch things now. Wow. Out the bat, talking about touching my hair. Love it when people touch my hair.
Okay, Dina, do you want to give me a little intro?
Yeah, my name is Dina.
Dina was the one sending those flirtatious texts.
I realize we're very similar in the way we interact with people. We love attention. We love being flirty.
When it's not the pandemic, Dina is usually a server, And just like Nikki, she has a job that's been on hold and can't be done from home. She answered the flyer because she could already imagine the person on the other end being her friend.
And also there was like no risk either, you know, because if I had met someone from real life, anytime I meet someone new in real life right now, it just feels like a risk. And I just constantly think about it. So, yeah, it just felt very natural. It was like these little moments when we would be texting where I felt like we're not stuck in the middle of this terrible, terrible thing that's happening to all of us.
Nothing is forever. Steve, the one who met Nikki at the crawfish eating contest, stopped texting after about 5 weeks. And Nikki, after connecting with almost 100 people, is ready for something else.
I didn't hang up new flyers this weekend. I'd say 50% on purpose. One, I was lazy, but two, I have like 80 conversations going right now. I can't keep on doing this forever.
There's no contract for these friendships. That's never what it was about for Nikki. It was about mimicking those little things, the kind of play with strangers that can make your day, a flirtation at the coffee shop, or a joke exchanged in an elevator. The problem right now is that we're living in a world where laughing out loud can actively spread the virus. And Nikki was able to find a way to do it safely.
I will say that, yes, there are people that I have felt like the energy is really good, you know? As the kids say, we're vibing. I'm definitely vibing with certain people better than others. But what I think is appropriate to say is that if you're listening and we talked, you were the person that I vibed the best with. It's you. I can't wait to continue talking to you.
That was Nikki Crawford in Chicago, brought to us by our reporter, Jenny Casas. So those are our two submissions for the 2020 time capsule that WNYC is making. And now I really urge you to submit your reflections on 2020 as well. Here's how it works. Go to wnyc.org/timecapsule. You're going to find a couple things there. First, there's a link to where you can submit whatever you want to memorialize. The idea is that this is our first draft of the history of this remarkable year. So what do you want included? Click the link and record. Second, you'll find some of the stuff that WNYC has already put into the time capsule. So some of our own reporting and some of your phone calls. We'll take all of this and all of your submissions and put them on a hard drive and store them on top of the Empire State Building right next to our broadcast transmitter up there. And we'll open it again in 2030 to see what our 2020 selves had to say about this year. And as we conclude 2020, I want to finish by thanking you, first off, all of you, and all of the people who work on this show for helping me make it a meaningful space. And let me name some names here. Each week, Kevin Bristow, Matthew Miranda, and Jared Paul do all of the engineering magic to make both the show and the podcast possible. Additional engineering help this week from Joe Pallord. Our theme music is written by Hannes Brown and performed by the Outer Borough Brass Band. And while it's my voice you hear each Sunday when you tune in, there are a bunch of producers and reporters and editors who each week are helping to figure out who I should interview and what I should ask them, and who are also out reporting and making the stories that you hear. So those people include Carolyn Adams, Emily Botine, Jenny Casas, Marianne McCune, Christopher Wirth, and Vera Lynn Williams. They also include Karen Frillman, who is our executive producer and who has really been my personal mentor in making radio. So a special thanks to her. And a special thanks also to WNYC's program director, Jacqueline Sincata, and the head of live radio, Megan Ryan, for having faith in us to join all of you in this time slot each week. And finally, of course, a special thanks to all of you for spending this time with us. The show is ultimately about community, a community of people who I said want to share joy and work of living in a plural society. So thank you for being part of it. I'm Kai Wright, and I'll talk with you in the new year.